Sheila? Is everything all right?
No, it's not. My cat died.
Oh, no. Senior Noodle Bomb?
No, that's Debbie's cat. She's an idiot. My cat was named Meow. Is the time for all good men to come to the aid of their country. I just called him Meow.
TBTL!
My dream is to sail around the world on a catamaran with two members of every cat race and share my love with cats for all the humans to see around the world.
Sounds like you're really going through some tough stuff right now. It's too bad there's not doctors for your mind.
Ahoy, hoy! Is that still a thing?
Are you seriously detaining me again? Am I being rendered?
No, you're being friendered. So just please accept our compulsory hospitality.
Boy, a lot of cat talk right here at the top of the show. I wish the Bay Kitty were here to hear it. I don't mean like on planet Earth. She is on planet Earth, but she's somewhere wandering in the wilds of Alabama Hill. Hi there, everybody. Welcome to a Tuesday afternoon edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
Now that's interesting.
My name is Luke Burbank. I'm your host.
Hello, everyone.
Coming to you, as previously mentioned, from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, perched atop Alabama Hill in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City, where it is very, very smoky. I mentioned this yesterday, but it has actually gotten smokier since yesterday. There are fires, wildfires in British Columbia, up in Canada. And we here in Bellingham, we are just across the border, really, from Canada. And it is hitting us hard. And I'll tell you, day two of me not going on a jog, I'm telling myself it's because the smoke is bad for me.
The uniquely fine mist penetrates deep into your sinuses, throat, and lungs.
But I think it's just because I don't feel like going on a jog. I'm not sure. I was listening to the radio today, and they were talking about the smoke, and they said it's only if you have a sort of compromised respiratory system. They said if you don't have that, you're basically fine. And I was like, why did you tell me that? The perfect cover story for not exercising today. So anyway, that's the story here. The pod dog. Took the pod dog to the dog park this morning. Her coprophagia, her recently emerging coprophagia, that is to say, propensity towards eating other dogs' leavings, that seemed to have abated for at least one trip to the dog park, so that was a relief. And I'm very excited to be bringing you episode 2,705 in a collector's series.
Let the fun begin.
I am so excited also to tell you about this story from Australia, where a small town has a guy and his dog who are missing. They've been missing for about a year. And everyone in this small Australian town is, in fact, a suspect.
Australia is a wonderful island.
And Australians are just as unique, both warm and direct.
2 points, if you remember what that's a reference to. So we'll talk about that. Plus, we'll do emails and V-mails. The Song of the Summer voting is now underway at tbtl.net. In fact, we've almost, God, I mean, I could go out on a big old limb here. Actually, going out on a big old limb, that would be fine. I mean, that would be stable. I might go out on a small old limb today and just make a kind of impromptu announcement about a fun TBTL event coming up. I don't know. I'll have to ask the longest running Cobro of the show if it's a good idea. He's known for his drawings of tall ships, their grace and their splendor. He's a soulful rocker from New Hampshire. He might have fish tacos for dinner as long as it's not too early. He's Andrew
Go Browns
Walsh, and he joins us now from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. He was able to hold his tongue because I dispensed with the Australian impressions today during the open of the show. Hello, my dude.
Hey there. It doesn't mean that I wasn't still just muttering under my breath, swearing at you, and doing all my usual
stuff. Didn't rise to the level of breaking in on the show and going, nope, like yesterday.
I just kept the mic closed this time, like I usually do, and I was able to just, you know, curse you quietly. By the way, really fun show yesterday. I meant to text you that later. I was just like, we covered a lot of ground, sure. We made it across several rivers. But man, I had a lot of fun yesterday. I got done with the show, and I was like, man, that was great.
I agree. It was a fun, weird, meandering show where we kept trying to end the show and then some other topic would pop up And then we would give it that typical TBTL treatment where we would both say nothing and everything about it. That was a real fun show. I had the same takeaway from it. Getting yesterday? I think I asked you about the smoke. Really good stuff.
Good stuff.
And you said you didn't know if it was smoky in Seattle. Have you left your house in the 24 hours since we last recorded? And have you noticed? Are you also under this blanket of particulates?
I thought about you today when I saw a bunch of people posting on, I don't know if it was Twitter or Facebook, about how there is bad air here in Seattle. And you know what? I did just leave my house. Then I scurried quickly to the grocery store where I got some takeout food from Whole Foods and brought it back here and shoved it in my
face.
What'd you go with? I got this is unusual for me, but I got one of those brown, you know, takeout containers. I filled half of it with a green salad and half of it with like a rigatoni kind of pasta, which is definitely not low carb, in a meat sauce. And it was good. But I think that I probably delicious. Just keep my, you know what, I keep my head down, looking down, I think. I think I just wasn't paying attention.
I wondered
attention.
About that when you mentioned you actually did leave the house, but you were still hadn't really noticed what the air quality was. That kind of makes me feel mildly bummed. Like, you leave, you're probably thinking about a million things. We got some, once again, we got some cool TBTL stuff on the horizon, which now we're considering and puzzling through. Just kind of see you walking, kind of with your head down, just trying to hurry up, get your food, get back home, get ready to do the show. But it makes me feel sad because there's this whole wide world of Canadian, dangerous Canadian smoke that's just hovering just feet above your head and you have no idea.
Yeah, that does kind of depress me looking back on that, because it is like sometimes I my mornings, what happens is I always wake up later than I want. That's not true. I wake up when I want, but then I stay in bed, and then I'll start reading, and then I'll fall back asleep.
See,
I
don't think that that's such a bad thing. I have kind of, you know, as I've been on semi-summer vacation, I've kind of settled into this groove where sometimes I'll wake up. It depends on there's an unspoken battle between me and Carrie as to who's going to have
that's my wife.
Who's going to feed the animals in the morning. So if I am not the one that feeds the animals in the morning, I'll sometimes wake up and I'm not quite ready to get out of bed. But then if I have my laptop nearby, I can actually do what amounts to a certain amount of work in bed, kind of ease into the day, check the emails, look around for some stories. I have kind of decided that that's not being it is being sort of lazy, but it's not being unproductive.
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely be more productive and feel better about myself if I, like, kind of got out of bed, you know, when Genevieve got out of bed in the morning, you know, in, like, more like the 8 o'clock hour, got things done. When I do that, I feel great. But then if I stay in bed and lollygag, do you use the word lollygag? That was a big uh-huh. word in my family growing up. Don't stop lollygagging. Get up. Get over here. But if I'm lollygagging, then Genevieve leaves, then I'm just like, oh, man, then there's a chance I'm going to have what I call bedlock. I don't actually call it that. I'm making that up. But then I'm going to be like, kind of like, you know, once I kind of miss that kind of deadline, then I'm like, well, whatever. Right. Now I'll just like read the news. And like a lot of those emails you and I were sending back and forth, I shouldn't tell you this because that'll reveal just how late I was in bed. But like a lot of those texts that you and I were sending back and forth, or emails, some TBTL planning stuff, that was all sent from my phone, from my boudoir. That doesn't feel great. And then what happens is when I wake up too late like that, or get motivated and out of bed, I kind of feel gross. And then I kind of rush around for the next half hour, kind of, or like hour or whatever. And I think part of that is because maybe I'm a little bit behind, but also because I kind of feel bad. So I'm trying to get a bunch of stuff done. And then when I ran to grab my lunch, I did just kind of hustle out the door. I did do one thing, though. And now I'm trying to relive that moment of when I left my house, went to the grocery store and came back. Actually, a couple of things happened. First of all, got into a little, not altercation, but kind of depressing situation. Remember I mentioned Leon, my Real Change vendor, Real Change, the homeless newspaper here in town. I don't know what's going on with him, but he hasn't been selling the Real Change outside of Whole Foods for a long time. But there's a new person there, She's a transgender woman, and I've seen her a couple of times now, and I go there today, and she's standing there, but then there's, like, some other people, apparently homeless people, who, like, looks like a pretty young couple, maybe in their 20s or whatever, with cardboard signs, and they're, like, sitting on the ground right near her, but they're, like, totally harassing her. It was very, very upsetting. I just kind of came in the middle of it, and I was kind of, like, wondering. It's, like, it was one of those things where I really didn't know what to do. Like, they're, like, yelling something at her and just, like, kind of berating her, and I kind of come in the middle of it, so I kind of like stand between them. I kind of get close to her and kind of like turn my back to them to block it, and I'm kind of like, you know, getting my money out to buy a paper from her. I'm just like, you all right? Like, what's going on? She's like, you can't really escape this stuff. I'm all right. Thanks for checking in. I just felt terrible. Then I kind of yelled at the guy as I was going in. I'm like, leave her alone. Then he's like, you leave him alone. Like, I don't know what the hell was going on. It's kind of like, usually, I mean, it's just one of those things where I feel no matter what I do, I'm sure other people would have said nothing. I'm sure other people might have stood up for her more, but I always feel like so impotent in those situations and so weak. And I wonder what you would have done in that situation. Probably something more manly as opposed to just kind of yelling something over your shoulder.
Carrie and I were having a kind of related, but slightly different conversation last night about this. We were having some dinner, and somebody came into the restaurant who appeared to be mentally ill. They were shirtless, and they were kind of wandering around. And I was, like, from where Carrie and I were sitting, her back was to the person, but I was just sort of observing it. And just, you know, I didn't have a plan on what I was going to do, but I also, to be honest with you, and not to get overly, like, gendered about things, if it was going to come down to the 19-year-old hostess who was 5 foot tall and 100 pounds, or me having to shepherd this guy out, I would have probably tried to help a little bit, but nothing happened. The manager of the restaurant, also a woman, came out and very professionally escorted the guy out, worked it out. Clearly not her first rodeo with that. But after that, Carrie and I started talking about, like, what do you do in those situations? Because she had been at dinner with a couple friends at some point in the past, and there was a person who appeared to be mentally ill, probably homeless, that was coming up. They were sitting in an outside seating area, and this person just kept coming up and kind of bothering the different diners. Mm. And then when this person finally moved on, one of Carrie's dinner mates, a man, the husband of her friend, said, you know, I just never wanted to know what to do in those situations because I don't want to make things worse. Mm-hmm. But I don't. So it's like it is an impossible thing because you might stand up to the person and they might just be like, OK, and they might leave. And that would be like a good outcome. But you might make things way worse. They might pull out a weapon, or they might just become totally focused on you, or they might hurt somebody else to prove a point to you. I mean, there's like a million bad outcomes. And so I don't think you were being impotent or lame or a wuss. I think you were just in the moment trying to make that impossible calculation that we've all had to make, and it's just no good choice. Like, what, going up fighting a homeless guy? Like, that's not a good outcome, you know?
If I can get through 1 week without fighting a homeless guy, man, that's all I'm just trying to do. That's what the doctor says for my own mental health. So, by the way, kind of good news to that story. I go in there. I was starving. I'm in there to get my food, but then kind of like, you know, you get your blood up like that. The adrenaline kind of kicks in a little bit. So I kind of wasn't that hungry yet. Huh. I walked away with like 4 pounds of pasta.
That's but like, an interesting diet approach. Yeah. I might look into that. You know, I'm up. Right. I'm up for any fad diet. How about the anger diet? Get really mad every time you're about to eat and watch the pounds melt away.
The anger diet. I actually think you could write a book called The Anger Diet. I'm writing that down as a possible show title. But you know how, it's just a little bit the adrenaline in there. So I was like, okay, so I scooped up my food because I knew I'd be hungry in a little bit anyway. I was probably only in the store for, I guess I mentioned that because I found myself doing that thing, you know, when you kind of get worked up and your brain is somewhere else. I just kind of found myself circling like the food islands around and around and around, like trying to think about what food I want.
Even when I'm not mad, I do that in Whole Foods because everything looks good to me and I can never. I have a real, like, this is why I don't go to buffets in Las Vegas, because I have this kind of, like, paralysis when there are too many things that seem like a kind of a good option. Mm-hmm. It honestly overwhelms me a little bit.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Throw a bunch of adrenaline on the mix, and I'd still be circling one of those islands, like the Thai,
like
the Thai noodle salad station or something.
Yes. But anyway, so let's say I was in there for 10 minutes or something. By the time I came back out, the people who were harassing her were gone. So I think that probably, and this is what I should have done, and I think if I see something like that happening again, not that it's necessarily the store's problem. I think, though, if I had gone in and just maybe went to the info desk or maybe found a manager or somebody and just said, hey, just so you know, there's some people who are harassing the Real Change vendor. Because I wonder if there – I don't know if there's a specific agreement between establishments and the Real Change vendors. I mean, technically they're on the sidewalk, but also, you know, they're a legit entity that is, I think, kind of that everybody kind of feels good about, frankly.
You know, you could ask the acting editor of that newspaper.
Right. Actually, I was our friend Hannah is the acting editor there. I was actually, I shouldn't even say this on the show. Never mind. I'll just say it so that you don't think I'm hiding something weird. I was toying with the idea of asking Hannah what the ethics would be. And this makes me sound really weird. I shouldn't have said this on the show. But seeing if I could pass my information along to somebody in case Leon is still working with the organization, in case he did want to get a hold of me or whatever. Because I just see him a lot, not just outside there, but like around the neighborhood.
How's that weird?
I don't know. Why am I soliciting people? I don't know.
Became friends with somebody who's right. doing this particular job, and you haven't seen him in a while, and you're probably kind of wondering what happened to him and hoping he's okay. And
right.
I think that's nothing but a positive thing. I think he would probably appreciate that somebody has taken an interest in him, and you know. Anyway,
yeah, maybe. I was going to ask her if she thinks that would be weird if I. And again, you would never ask for somebody's contact information, but just pass yours along. But anyway, so they were gone. So I wonder if maybe somebody went to somebody at Whole Foods and said, "Hey, there are some people harassing the Real Change vendor out there," like, you know, and maybe just a stern word from probably somebody like 17 years old but wearing a green apron was able to, you know, maybe flush these bad apples out of there. Who knows? But I was glad to see they were gone. Oh, so yeah, anyway, so that was one thing. And then the other thing was on my way there, right before that happened, like the 3-minute walk to get there, I was on the phone with like some phone bank person. I finally responded. I took a photo of these notices I'd been getting from my old high school, from my alma mater, that just wanted me to like call this number to update my personal information for this like new whatever alumni book they're sending out. And I thought they just needed to confirm my address. I kept thinking like, just do this online, you dinguses. Like, why do you keep on spending money on postage to send me these notes saying, you're missing your opportunity to update your personal info in the alumni directory? But it's still, like, I couldn't just throw them away. It was, like, bugging me. So today I finally called. By the way.
Yeah, I saw you texted those, or rather tweeted those at me.
Yeah, because like, it seemed very Burbankian.
You're like, am I doing this right?
Because one of them said, call now. The other one said, deadline approaching. And the other one said, you missed the deadline. We're extending it for you or something. It reminded me of stories that you've talked about, how you don't even mess with bills until they start coming in pink or red in the red envelopes. Isn't that what you said? Then you know you're in trouble and you got to actually pay the bill.
Yes. Yes. More so, and much more so in my single days, because now My wife who's a highly organized person, would not typically allow that to go on. But yes, I have had many experiences. Yellow envelope is usually, if it's yellow, let it mellow. You know,
right,
you get
sure.
that red envelope, though, that's when shit's getting very real.
Right, right. So anyway, I called and, you know, now it makes sense. I didn't understand, like, why do they keep on sending these things? Just, you have my email on file, email me, I'll click, yes, this is still my information and that's all you need. But then, of course, after you update all of your information, they make a sales pitch for, you know, buying the director. I couldn't even hear what they're trying to sell me at the end of the day. Thing and said no. So anyway, that that whole walk, now that I relive it, first of all, there was some adventure involved, but also like I was on the phone distracted for part of it, then this other thing happened, then I think my mind was pretty clouded on the walk home thinking about what had just kind of gone down at the Whole Foods. No bear spray incidents at the Whole Foods this time though, so
have you guys caught up with that guy who what did he do? Break the finger of the bad guy?
Yeah, that's right. No, I need to start looking at people's name tags more. You said his name was Near or something, right?
Some kind of a name I don't think I'd heard before.
Anyway.
So all of that going on.
I did not look at the sky. God, what a long, dumb story.
We got to take a break. We're overdue. But I want to ask you actually a question about this. I don't know why I'm interested in this element of the story, but I want to ask you about this thing that allegedly was your high school because I assume it was some other company, right, that sells some bullshit thing, kind of like class rings, like Jostens. What was it? It was like the alumni directory.
Oh, no, I think, let's see, do I still have the thing here? No, I think it was legit. It's definitely, so I went to
a... So when you called, you got somebody associated.
Yeah, yeah, it wasn't, school. It wasn't total bullshit. Oh, like, okay. They had my information, they had my old, like, do you still work at New Hampshire Public Radio? Like, it's really was for the alumni directory, and I went to, like, a kind of a fancy, dancy private school, so they like to really do these things, and then that's why they try to sell you something, because, you know, at the end, they want you to kind of donate back to, you know, the private school, which I'd never send funds back. I never send... Was it tithes? I never send tithes back to St. Ignatius.
You never send the first fruit of your labor?
No, I don't. But I think it was legit. But what I didn't understand was, like, there are so many easier ways to do this. Send us a link. We can fill out our information online. But clearly, at the end, they wanted to make kind of a fundraising pitch. And that's why they, you know, it was a phone bank that I was calling. But I do think it was legit. And I did get you a class ring that says, staying alive in 95, Luke Burbank, St. Ignatius.
Well, I'm 94.
Oh.
So I'm going to have to – I don't know how I'm going to remedy that. Maybe we can scratch the five into being a four. I just – all these – look, everybody's got to make a living, but it's just all these ancillary things where, like – I'm trying to think of a good example where some organization is like trying to just basically sell some bullshit, but they've gotten your number or your name because of the fact that you went to the school. You know, you're maybe not the school itself, but some – at some point your name got sold off of a list and they're like, be on the – or it's like the who's who of – there was this book I remember, like, Who's Who of American Students or Who's Who of American Education, which was this, like, complete titanically bullshit thing that parents would buy because their kid, who probably wasn't that bright, was in the Who's Who of American Students. Mm-hmm. And they just wanted to be able to say, my kid's in the Who's Who. And I remember somebody once saying to me, oh, no, he's pretty smart. He was in the Who's Who of American whatever. I was like, oh, cool. My dad's in the phone book. Great.
Right.
Like,
yes.
I mean, and my dad didn't have to pay for them to deliver the phone book. Like, again, everyone's got to make a living. I don't know why I'm choosing this particular issue to drill down on, but I that kind of stuff just for some – I guess what I mean is when they really, really kind of blow your phone up or blow your – and I've been – since we talked about some version of this for a reason I don't remember, one of these like community service for the blind or – and by the way,
I got
maybe
a police call, I think. That's what we talked about. It was like,
yes,
this – because I told you that I'm usually nice to telemarketers, but I was really getting kind of fed up with these ones who kept on claiming that they were with like the law enforcement of New Hampshire because I have a New Hampshire phone number, and they were calling and like saying, you know, why don't you, you know, support our organization. I think one time I actually said to them, I'm not in line with your values or something
that.
And then
right.
We got into this conversation, and then you made it clear that like, yeah, no, these are kind of, these
sometimes
shammy organizations.
And, yeah. There was some, like some scam watch thing on them. Yeah. Just this idea that like, and again, I don't know why I'm deciding to take on Walsh High in this. I always get confused. Is it Ignatius or Walsh?
This is Ignatius, although this is Ignatius. I think A Man for Others, though, is just a Jesuit thing, and both schools were Jesuit. But, boy, you got me wondering now. I'm like, God, no, I think this is with the school. But I think this is a legit. It is a fundraising thing on behalf of the school. But, like, they asked, like, for the book, like, what was your favorite memory of your time at Ignatius? And I said to the woman, I'm like, I'm sorry. I thought you just needed to verify my basic information. I don't have time to be creative right now. She's like, that's fine. We'll just move
on. I'm in a whole thing. There's a transgender person who's selling newspapers for the homeless, being menaced by other people who are economically disadvantaged. And I'm trying to do some salad pasta double team in this cardboard box, man. I got a lot going on.
I'm trying to stalk my old real change vendor. Like, come on. Quote me on that, lady.
All right, let's take a break, and then we will come back and find more meaningless things to talk about. That's a hell of a forward promotion.
Do you want to start over? I feel like I just like
no.
Really...
I'm liking this
all
show.
Right, okay,
I mean, I don't know what's going on. Maybe it's maybe I'm high on Canadian wildfire smoke. By the way, somebody is going to have to. There's every frigging store in Bellingham is now pot. Someone's got to have Canadian wildfire. That's got to be a flavor of weed, right?
Right.
I mean, so maybe the Canadian wildfires go into my head, but no, I'm having a fun time today, even though we once again are all over the map. All right, quick break, and then we will be back with more TBTL. Is this Emmylou Harris or Iris DeMent?
It is Graham Parsons with Emmylou Harris. Good ear.
Ha. You I didn't like, get the Graham Parsons part, but...
I feel like you might be a Graham Parsons guy. Are you a Graham Parsons guy?
I bet I would be. No, no, no. I think I could be. If I put my mind to it. I think I would like his stuff. I just don't think I've heard a ton about him. Mostly what I know about him is the whole crazy story of the theft of his body after he died.
Oh, God, that's right. Did they make a documentary about that?
They made a fictionalized, or at least a movie with actors starring Johnny Knoxville called Grand Theft Parsons.
Right. I forgot about that. Huh.
That is sort of a crazy story. I haven't seen that movie, but I bet I would like it.
Yeah, because you're kind of a Johnny Knoxville guy, right?
Well, I like him. I think he's... I know that sort of Jackass stuff is not really... I think it's not really your cup of tea. But Johnny Knoxville as a guy, he just seems like he's sort of he's the opposite of Vince Vaughn for me. Okay, when I was 20 years old or whatever, and I saw Swingers at the Crest Cinema in Seattle, the discount movie theater. I mean, honestly, and this will be either very surprising or unsurprising to those of you out there, but it was like it had a big impact on me. I was like, oh my God, this is the way to be a cool guy. You swing dance, you talk about beautiful babies, you go to Vegas. Like, it just all worked for me because my mind was mostly unformed. But then over time, I've kind of like a lot of Vince Vaughn's shtick has kind of run. It's run kind of thin for me. And meanwhile, Johnny Knoxville is the kind of guy who starts out doing like these movies and these TV shows that are just kind of gross out and about getting, taking shots to the nuts. And then over time, I hear him interviewed and everything, and he actually seems like kind of a funny, interesting, varied guy. But also, this movie has Michael Shannon in it. Michael Shannon's in like everything now. Agent Van Alden from Boardwalk Empire, and then of course he's in like a million movies now. And Christina Applegate, and
he's in a weird movie that I caught. It's almost a Christmas movie that I caught either late at night or in the corners of Netflix somewhere, where I think he dresses up like a Sasquatch. And sort of kind of accidentally terrorizes a town. It's like this tiny little indie film that he's in. And whenever I see him in a movie and I try to remember who he is, I ask Genevieve, is that the guy from the Sasquatch movie? And she's like, that is like the least thing he's ever been in. Like, you can't keep on calling him that.
Okay, new game, really quick. Like, least known thing for most famous person.
Right, Michael Shannon.
Like... Or like, no, but like, just like, what would some other examples be? Oh, it would be
God.
Like,
my brain always locks up here, but I know I do that a lot. A
lot of pressure.
I'm terrible with knowing who actors are. So often, like the first 15 minutes of a film is me thinking, I know this person. I know that. Where do I know them? Where do I know them? And then eventually I'll lean over to Veeves and I'll be like, is that that person who was in that Colgate commercial? She's like, that's Kate Winslet, you idiot. Like, she might have been in a Colgate commercial, but I don't know.
It'd be like, Oh, yeah. You know who that was? That's Bruce Willis from the Seagram's commercial.
Right! Wait, no, that's it.
I don't think he's really singing into that bottle. I think he's lip syncing, to be honest with
you. Wait, is that the guy from The Return of Bruno? Right? Yeah. I didn't know he acted. This is great.
That would be a fun game. We actually gave it some thought, which is not the time for it. Nothing worse than like me searching around for a drop or me searching around for a thought.
Right.
And the listeners having to listen to it. Those are my two least favorite. That's my least favorite way to be on this show. But like just... The game is somebody who's super famous, and then what's the least well-known thing they've been in. But here's where the game gets more nuanced. Every single famous actor has been in some small show. So it's not just – the point is – the goal is not to just be like, Sandra Bullock from Who's the Boss? She's probably on Who's the Boss for a minute. Or, Leo DiCaprio, the guy from Growing Pains? Actually, that would work. Because the thing that you're citing them from has to be at least well-known enough that people would get the joke,
right.
If that makes any sense.
Sure.
You can't just say, from the educational – from the Skamania County educational video that I'm sure somebody shot when they were trying to make it as an actor, and you know what I mean? Like, it's got to be – It's got to be a famous person from a thing that no one knows them from, but which people kind of remember they were in for a minute.
Like, here's a I'm cheating. I'm looking it up. But, like, you see Uma Thurman and you're like, oh, my God, that's the woman from The Adventures of Baron Munchausen. Right. She was great. Have you ever seen that? You're kind of a – what's the name of the director? Terry Gilliam. You're a Gilliam head, right?
I do like some Gilliam films. I did not see that one. I always – not unlike how I mixed up Brain Candy with Brain Donors, I think I always mix that one up with Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, and I don't know why.
Mm.
Those movies seem like they came out – Baron von Munchausen and Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. I haven't seen either of those movies. But I always thought those were the same movie for some reason.
That is weird. I'm going to see if they came out in the same year. I have seen them both. They did both come out in 1988. I'll bet you saw commercials for them or something at the same time.
I bet you what I saw
posters.
Was the VHS tape for rent at Cregan's Pharmacy. They were probably sitting near each other, and I was confused by the cover art for both of them, and I was just like, not for me.
Right. And I will say that there are some things that I love by Terry Gilliam. As you know, I will always reference the movie Brazil. I mean, that's a drinking game. Take a shot every time one of us mentions Brazil on this show. Or what's the other one, the post-apocalyptic one with the lions?
12 Monkeys.
12 Monkeys. I love that movie.
Oh, that's Brad got the Return of Bruno in it.
It does. There you go.
Back to Bruno.
And Brad Pitt actually overacts in that one. I think that he's a little played out in that. But anyway, I love Terry Gilliam. But some of those early ones that as a film nerd or whatever I considered myself in college, I was supposed to really love, they didn't do a lot for me. And Munchausen is one.
Really?
Of them. Yeah.
I also learned that I've been adding Von to the name for no reason. Von Munchausen. It is, of course, just Munchausen.
Although
he's not
Baron Von,
the syndrome is
our friend. Yeah. Maybe he does a character called Baron Von Munchausen. He does the entire
act. That would be
act.
A deep cut. He is just the kind of like completely like he has the weirdest, widest range of interest. I could see that being a thing he'd get into. We need to have him back on the show. What the hell?
We really should. I mean, I remember you told I am embarrassed to say I didn't know who he was before he was on TBTL. This would have been about 3 years ago, I think. I was in LA.
About robot
we were on
sex
APM.
Or something?
It wasn't supposed to be. He just came on because he was going to be doing a show or LiveWire, and he had contacted you, and you're like, sure, hop on. And so I just kind of mentioned something offhandedly because at the time I had been doing a lot of thinking about sex robots. Don't. Take that out of context, but like Veeves and I had this whole like kind of conversation after watching an 80s movie called Cherry 2000 with Meg
yes.
Ryan, and remember I kind of was obsessed with this idea of like what would society be like especially if men who are often driven by sexual desires could just like have these robots that they could do anything with, what would society look like, what would be the further implications of that. And I just kind of mentioned that for some reason. And then Baron Von just like goes like he had been doing so much thinking about it. Wasn't he even maybe producing a show or something related to that? Like it turns out like, oh, yeah, you want to talk about this? Let's talk about this. And then it just like took
he
over
had
the
like,
podcast.
In total opposition to how we normally handle things on the show, he had really well thought out kind of reasoning and arguments for various ways to look at this. Like he had clearly done a lot of thinking and everything he said kind of illuminated the issue. In a way that I hadn't previously had it illuminated for me. It was great. It remains one of the – that and when Kiki Lolo went on a description of how Tom Sawyer is problematic
right.
and how we should feel about stuff like that. Those have been the two high points of the show over the course of the last 3 to 4 years.
Yeah.
Baron Munchausen, known in some quarters as Baron von Munchausen, not a box office smash. $46.5 million budget, box office of $8 million. Did feature, though, Sarah Polley as Sally Salt. Sarah Polley, who I believe has gone on to make some really interesting films. Didn't she make a documentary that won about her family, Stories We Tell, which was like a – I think that was a movie about her family. She's an actor, too, who's been in a bunch of stuff. Anyway.
This is news to me. No, I'm out of my depth now. You're out of your depth,
element,
Andy.
Donnie.
You're out of
your haste. That's and oh, that isn't. I'm confusing my. I'm confusing my films. I was gonna say Terry Gilliam also made Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, which
me
is like
so good.
Having read that book before I saw the movie. No, that's not true. I think I saw the movie before I read the book. it's one of the few examples of a book like that where it's, you know, it's Hunter S. Thompson's obviously faulty, foggy, drug-addled memory of a bunch of shit that he's writing down. And then to enact that or to represent that cinematically must have been such a challenge. And I think that totally worked. It was like, but man, I think that's sort of a – that was, for me, maybe a Terry Gilliam high point.
Yeah, I can't believe it. And I actually read the book first, and I remember thinking, like, there's just no way. You can't do that. Like, the book is just too weird. You can't capture it. Yet somehow he totally captured it. I'll always be amazed by that. Yet somehow I always forget that on his CV when we find ourselves in these conversations.
I know we got to get to Australia, but now You're making me think of like 10 other weird things that I want to talk about. One, the scene when they check into the hotel in Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, when he sort of sees everyone there, the humans for the sort of like rapacious, bloodthirsty dinosaurs of consumption or lizards of consumption that they really are. You know that? You remember that scene where they all just sort of morph?
Vividly.
That always reminds me of the TV show Dinosaurs, not because the characters are doing that, but because of just the sort of like animatronic lizard-like creature.
Not the mama.
I read this thing the other day about – it was like a long – I guess you could say it was almost sort of an oral history of the last episode of the NBC sitcom Dinosaurs.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. Do you know what happens at the end of that show?
Spoiler. Basically, I'm not there yet. I'm only in season 3.
The main dinosaur, who I always assumed he reminded me of the like dinosaur. He reminded me of the dad from the Wonder Years, whatever that guy's name is.
Okay,
I always assumed that the dad from the Wonder Years was just the voice of the dinosaur from Dinosaurs. He basically brings on the ice age that kills everybody on the planet.
Oh, really?
And that's how and it's this crazy commentary on climate change. I mean, it's not crazy. It's this intense for network television. It is this intense commentary on climate change and unintended consequences. And I didn't even watch the episode. I just read about it because I like saw that show a couple times. And yeah, the baby would yell things and like I had no real opinion on it. But then when I went back and read that, what they found out that they were, I think it was the fourth or fifth season was going to be the last season of the show. So the writers knew for like a good amount of time that they were writing like the last episode of this show ever. And so basically, if my reading of it, if I remember correctly, the dad he works at a plant that does something, and he somehow there'd be this vicious cycle is unleashed of sort of doing environmental damage, which is making the world a worse place, but it's also selling more like stuff. Like people are going into the stores and they're buying batteries and tents and things as sort of like the climate and the world around them is getting worse. There's more commerce. And so this big Globo company is like famously, I guess, the head of the Globo company, as the world is literally coming to an end almost. It's like the third quarter. And he's like, but we're selling so much stuff. And they're like, yeah, but the world is ending. He goes, but that's a fourth quarter problem. Like, we'll worry about
joke.
That. Right? That's a solid spoof. And so anyway, it's all sort of brought about unintentionally by the dad from the family, and the son gets blocked out, and the weirdness of that show is I'm a little confused as to the historical when it's set. I think it is set in dinosaur times, but the dinosaurs live like normal people, I think was the kind of the joke. And so there's weirdly modern stuff going on for them, even though they're like in the whatever, you know, Jurassic period or something. And so he just apologizes. I think the dad like apologizes to the family, and they're huddled together in their house, which is rapidly getting covered with snow from the outside.
This is
and it's
real.
Like and scene.
Wow.
And end of television series. How nuts is that?
I'm reading on Wikipedia now. They describe it as what the viewer would recognize as a nuclear winter. So you kind of have that.
Kind of. I don't think that there's. If from what I read, I don't think that there's. Maybe it looks like a nuclear winter. Maybe there's a nuclear reactor that's melting down. Maybe that's what's creating it. There's like horrible consequences have been. Unintended consequences have been created. But it's like just like the end of the show is the dinosaurs huddling together in their home, hoping they'll make it when we know they're not going to make it. And just like the world outside is just crumbling.
That makes me really want to, like, because I didn't even know this ran for four seasons. I'm looking at it now. It ran from 91 to 94 for four seasons. And I always thought it was, like, maybe something that ran for one season that was just a product of, I would have assumed the late 80s, but clearly this is the early 90s. That maybe ran for a season. It was weird, and nobody will remember it except for, like, Michael Ian Black when he's on, like, Remember the 90s on VH1 or whatever. But, like, hearing this actually makes me want to go and actually watch it from the beginning. But I do wonder, like, I wonder if it was a show that, like, I find it hard to believe that if I get into it, that it's actually that enjoyable. It sounds like maybe they really went out on a really cool note, but I don't know.
Well, that same article that I read mentioned that this was not the first time they had taken on, like, kind of large issues, and I forget if it was you know, racism or poverty or something else, but apparently, like, I don't know if it was, like, somehow because it was, like, you know, a dinosaur puppets, it was kind of less, it was, they could get away with more, or they could challenge the American viewers more or something. But I guess that was, like, a weird thing about this show, was they just weren't afraid to go for it on certain topics. Again, not a thing I would have ever thought about the short, relatively short-lived NBC show Dinosaurs.
Can we just listen to a little bit of it? I know this. Yes. Well, I know this always pays off. It's always what people
want. Is this the end of the final scene?
No, I just typed in "not the mama" because that's the only thing I remember. Is a little baby would always, like, say,
yeah, that was
not
the catchphrase.
Yeah, and so I typed that in. There's a 1 minute and 33 second clip, and it looks like the baby dinosaur is on the mom's shoulders, hitting her with a frying pan in the head. I assume chanting "not the mama." I don't know.
Not the mama.
You do that one more time, and I'm going to throw you across the room.
Oh, okay. So he's standing on his dad's shoulders while his dad is doing housework.
And he's voiced by Seth MacFarlane playing Peter Griffith.
Is that? That's not really Seth MacFarlane.
No, but it just sounds like it.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, you're right. It does sound like it. Teapot, maybe?
Not the mama! Wee! Oof!
Okay, the mom's walking into the kitchen.
Want to give daddy a kiss?
Okay, this is just a montage of "not the mamas." Okay, like I told you, it always pays off. There you go. I just needed that. When we start talking about this stuff, I just need to scratch the itch a little bit.
I feel you. I feel you on that. So that was a pretty long digression on on a TV show that's been out of whatever you'd call it, production, for a good 20 to 30 years. But I think we can all agree it was well worth it. And on that note, if we do one thing right this show, let's thank the donors of the day properly. Yes, the donors.
Yes, the donors.
That's what I usually yell right before I hit you with a frying pan, Andrew. These are folks who donated during this year's TBTL-a-thon. They're making the show possible. In fact, they're making this episode 2705 in a collector series. They're making this one possible, and we thank them. We really do. We're talking about Laura Keene from Los Angeles, California. Heard of it. Jordan Nowrocki of Portland, Oregon. Not familiar with that town. Connor Mulcahy of Verona, New Jersey.
Making
Connor,
a return.
Good to have you back.
Appearance. Yes. We didn't scare you off the last 2 years with Sean's...
I just look forward to saying, Connor Mulcahy.
Can we talk about why I just called you Sean, by the way?
Did you just call me Sean?
I said we didn't scare you off with Sean's, and I was going to say impression, and then it occurred to me, your name is not Sean, and none of these people's names is Sean. Why did I suddenly just think you're Sean? That was weird. Okay.
Should we unpack this, or should we not unpack it? I don't know if we feel like...
Let's let it go. I just boggled my own mind. I guess it's not that hard.
Carrie Deutsch of Bellevue, Washington, and Patrick Brannan of Seattle, Washington. Laura, Jordan, Connor, Carrie, and Patrick, thank you from the bottom of our hearts for making TBTL possible. We are more than... I was having a dinner with our new friends and our neighbors down the street who are restaurateurs here in Bellingham. Wonderful time. But I was trying to explain TBTL to them and the kind of, like... And this happens occasionally. You probably know this too, Andrew, if you get into it. The first move is to try to, like, not explain what you do for a job.
Just say you're
a
fireman.
Weird job to have.
Yeah, that's what I do.
Yes. And I tell him I'm a television historian focusing on the work of the NBC family, the dinosaurs.
Great.
I tell him I'm a baron. Baron von Bruno. So when I started to try to describe it, I was also describing the fact that it's been here for like now 11, going on 11 years, and that it's supported by the listeners. And the look on their face of I think, of mild surprise that that's a thing that could work is something that happens a lot. And I have to say, this many years in, I have the same feeling of mild surprise. So just that it's just that the tens want to keep this thing going, and they are. And these tens, Laura, Jordan, Connor, and Carrie and Patrick, are the reason today's episode is happening. So thank you so much. We really appreciate it. We would not be here without you.
All right. I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I got to say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it here. This is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
You can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
All right, our top story today takes us to Larima, Australia. And back in December of last year, December of 2017, a guy named Paddy Moriarty, a local laborer who spent most of his life out in the outback, had left the one bar in Larima, Australia, called the Pink Panther.
Great name.
It's a hotel and bar. Again, population 11. Give or take, in this town. He had his dog with him, dog named Kelly, and he was never seen again and has still not been found. The dog is also missing. What's sort of crazy about this story is, first of all, this town of 11 people and the characters that live there, and the fact that there are multiple people in the town that seem to be suspects in this guy's disappearance. There's issues of meat pies. There's issues of alligators. There's issues of angry meat pie-related signs. I mean, there is just all kinds of intrigue in this town of Larima. And I got to admit, Andrew, we sort of mentioned this in passing yesterday. In reading this, I was like, oh, by the way, crocodile. I keep saying alligator. Crocodiles and alligators are not the same thing. Our listeners very well know this. And I apologize for the mistake. I forget the difference, but crocodiles, that's hence Crocodile Dundee. Crocodiles, that's an Australian thing. Alligators are like a Florida thing.
Right. I always get that wrong. But you're right. I should just remember Crocodile Dundee. It's not Alligator Dundee.
There you go. We've just done everyone a great service if you're trying to remember the difference. As we mentioned sort of in passing yesterday, what did we mention in passing yesterday?
I had mentioned that I got so excited
about my Crocodile Dundee like, device for remembering crocodiles versus alligators. Now I forget what we said.
I had mentioned that because I had a feeling you might say this in discussing the story, that you can't read this without imagining what your life would be if you lived in such a small town.
Yes, and like reading this, I just, for some bizarre, because I just do this crap because my brain is bad, I really was like, how long could I cut it in Larima, Australia, population 11? Would they embrace me? Would they hate me? There's also this, by the way, this great piece in the New York Times. Great piece of writing by Jacqueline Williams and really great photography in the piece. And you see these residents of this town in their various, you know, places they work and live. And I couldn't help but kind of go through person by person and think, would they like me? Would they embrace me? Would it be weird that I'm from the States? Like, I don't even have an I obviously do a pretty good Australian accent, so I think I could blend in for a number of days. But once they asked me where I was from and I said, Tuolabolibi. They would be like, that's not a town. And I would be like, busted. So what happened was this guy was having his typical afternoon of eight beers, which is mentioned in the story. That was typical for Mr. Moriarty. He'd had his eight beers. They were trying to say he was drunk. He'd had eight beers. That was it. And then he toddled off. They never saw him again. And they're trying to figure out who might have done it. It's being treated as a homicide. One of the initial suspects was a guy who was a bartender at the bar at the Pink Panther, who was described as a real kind of jerk. Actually, he was apparent. His name was Richard Simpson. He would get into it with everybody in the town. He had been a bartender at the Pink Panther. His boss, who owns the Pink Panther, a guy by the name of Sharp, described his former bartender and one of the suspects as he was an everyday drunk before lunch and not only smashed, but very unpleasant. So this guy, Richard Simpson, the bartender, apparently left town after being fired. Nobody's seen him in a while. The New York Times reporter goes to this guy's former, I don't know, room he was sleeping in this town, and just finds it full of like dirty clothes and empty beer cans, which is not how I hope to be remembered.
No.
You know, like I would like that. That's kind of worst case scenario. Like imagine your room at its absolute messiest, just like that. And I know yours rarely gets this way because of your love of cleaning. But like just kind of like just imagine your shit. It's least together. And then the New York Times comes looking for you. And all they find is just like, you know, they basically find the inner contents of that RV I tried to sell for the mummy. It's not a good look.
Yes. I'm sorry. I gotta. We got a letter from a listener. I want to say a while back, who their brother just bought a new house, and there was some latch, some little compartment that he hadn't checked out in like 6 months that he lived there. So they were having a party, and like, well, let's see what's in there. And Luke, what was in there? But a fencing sword and pornography. I'm sorry I can't credit the person who told me that. I'm just remembering this email now. It's somewhere.
Where was this
email.
House?
It was
we
in
need
a
to
place
figure
called
out, was the mummy there?
Yeah.
Was the mummy near there? Oh, that's another great part of I may have officially gotten off the – I'm going to try to – last night I tried to watch it again, Lodge 49. I just couldn't find the interest. But there's some great mummy-related drops because without spoiling it, let's just say a mummy is found, but it's not a mummy. It's – there's a more specific term for it, and Blaze, a.k.a. Simmer Down Stew, is extremely insistent that everyone use the right terminology for it, which is like reliculum corpsis or something. And everybody just keeps calling it a mummy, and he just keeps going, it's reliculum corpsis! And he's getting more mad about it. And then he's on TV, and he's like, I'm so mad because everyone's saying, it's a mummy! But it's actually a reliculum corpsis or whatever the proper term is. And then this is a beautiful moment. The local TV news, when they show the story, they just use the clip of him going, it's a mummy! Just so perfect.
I'm dying to – boy, you're really – sorry, we got to get back to the story. But you're really making me feel like, God, I should – and I'm not going to. But this is what happens. Like you just paid – you paid to play, buddy. Yeah. And now if I want to get ahead like you, I gotta plunk down the $4.99.
You got to pay the iron price.
Yeah.
Wait, what is the iron price?
Never. Let's talk about Australia. I'm sure I'll have more opportunities to explain the iron price to you.
So again, 11 people in the town. One of them's missing. One of the suspects is the a-hole bartender who nobody really liked and was then fired from the bar. Which, by the way, Pink Panther as a name for the bar and hotel.
Oh.
I'm sure if you went to this place, it's just like a shitty house that just has like a living room where you can get probably like a Foster's and then like a room with a cot in it where you could stay. Like, I'm sure that's what it is, but the name, the Pink Panther Hotel in a town of 11 people in the outback of Australia, it's described as being about the size of a city block surrounded by, like, I think it's like...
impenetrable shrubbery, right?
Impenetrable shrubbery. It just sounds like an insane, cool, weird place. So they have this kind of inquest. The authorities come in. They're trying to figure out who maybe did this, who saw him last. The bartender, who was the last person to see him, is a suspect. But then he sort of disappears, and they haven't announced anyone, by the way, to be the person most of interest in this. The other suspect is the guy who owns the bar, Barry Sharp, described as the publican of the Pink Panther. Have you ever heard of? Is that an Australian term?
I had to look it up. Actually, I was reading this on the New York Times app on my phone, and I don't know if you know this, but that has a built-in dictionary. And so if you tap and hold on a word, it'll just open the dictionary for you. And I learned that that is a term probably used more in England and Australia, but if you run or manage a pub, you're a publican.
Cool.
And if you used to run a pub and then you stopped and then you do it again, you're a Republican.
Yeah, I was trying to construct a similar spoof. No, I can't. I actually can.
Well, that's a pretty good spoof.
I can believe he made that joke.
How sad is my mind? I was trying to build it into a rhino joke, a Republican name only.
That's adding another layer.
Way too complicated.
Right.
Way too complicated. So
I'm so funny.
The publican, which by the way, is everybody in Australia named Barry? Is literally every male named Barry because Barry Fife, right? That's the guy that had Amber Heard and Johnny Depp.
Australia is a wonderful island.
And Australians are just as unique.
The
both
ag.
Warm and direct.
The agriculture minister or whatever he was.
Yes.
Yeah.
Who had them in trouble for bringing their dogs in without passing whatever. Anyway, this other guy, Barry Sharp, he's considered a suspect. Well, because A, he's in the town. He probably saw the guy close to the disappearance. And because he has a crocodile that he's raising in the back of the pub. Like, there is, like, some kind of little looks like, there's a picture of it. Appears to be sort of like a homemade little nature preserve that's not very big, that has a crocodile in it, and sugar gliders,
mm-hmm.
which are these crazy, like, little, like, flying possum kind of things.
Yes, I've heard of them. I think I've seen them in nature shows. I like that the writer mentions that, like, while she's talking to the publican, I believe she sees a sugar glider over his shoulder. I'm like, that's a weird detail. And then it opens up to the fact that he's got this menagerie of exotic animals behind his bar.
So there is suspicion aimed towards the publican because he has the crocodile, rather. And the thought is maybe he fed this guy who went missing, maybe he fed that guy to the crocodile. The crocodile, by the way, is also named Barry. No, I'm kidding. The crocodile is named Sam. But so you got the guy that owns the hotel who's got his pet crocodile in the back, and they're like, well, maybe he did it and fed the dude to the crocodile. A lot of suspicion falls on the owner of the local tea house, the other place you can go in Larima. And am I alone in saying, honestly, Andrew, like, a town of 11, two restaurants is a lot to me.
Yeah. Like, well, one, I guess they're very different. One's the bar and one's
20% of the people
right?
in this town are running restaurants. The other nine people have never heard of cooking at home. Like, we went to on our trip to Mississippi, we passed through entire towns that didn't have a restaurant. That's 11
true.
People.
That is true.
Like, a place where you can get meat pies. Okay, so Fran Hodgetts, who runs the Tea House, which is also a place you can get meat pies. She's the other suspect because she's 75 years old. This town doesn't feel like it's thriving, by the way, Andrew. There's nobody under the age of 90 living in this town.
It's true. They're all super old. But actually, let me just address what you said about the – I know you were kind of spoofing, but it does make – whenever I'm in a town like this, and I don't know if I've ever been in one quite as small, but you know, on our road trips, you go through these places that are so tiny and you can tell a bit impoverished, and you just think, like, what do the people do here? You might have even said that on our trip. My brain always goes to the same thing, like, where do the people travel far to, like, do they drive 30 to 40 minutes and have jobs in an area where there are more, like, kind of chain restaurants and factories and stuff? Like, how does the economy stay going? And in this case, I think there's a detail that people do pass through this town, and this tea house / meat pie store, it sounds like it serves a lot of people who are passing through. And so maybe they're generating some economy that way, because otherwise I don't understand how this place even stays afloat. Like, you have two people who are working at the bar, the story tells us. You have the one woman who's running the thing. Where do the other people work? Well, I guess they're retired.
There's a guy who's also a suspect who works for Miss Hodgetts. Which we'll talk about in a minute. Now, as we've been talking, I've now been looking around at some pictures at the Larima Pink Panther Hotel. First of all, we are definitely going here, Andrew.
Oh, great. Is that our next thon?
Yes. Why did you give it away? We are definitely going here. The bar has this like kind of awesome hand-painted like sign. We're at Larima, the highest bar in Northern Territory. So it must be some geographically notable place. Like it's at the end of the friggin' world for Australians. And it has the latitude and the longitude and the height listed on this sign. So it's got to be kind of, you know, notable for that. And then the Pink Panther, he's just got Pink Panthers everywhere. Like Pink Panthers made out of like fiberglass.
Are you seeing the really janky Pink Panther that seems to be made out of fiberglass or paper mache or something that's sitting on a big lawn chair? It's like this. It's about maybe 12 feet high and it's sitting there with its legs crossed on an armchair.
Yeah. The Larima Wayside Inn. But if you look at some of the other pictures, you'll also see he's got a Pink Panther that's in like a kind of not improvised, but very home constructed flying gyrocopter, kind of like the guy uses in Mad Max. The guy who eats the dog food. I'm talking the original Mel Gibson one, not the new one.
Sure.
Like, it's just, this place looks kind of amazing. And you'd think, considering I read the story yesterday, I've been thinking about it for 2 days, you would think that I would have done a little more recon on this. But as I'm looking at it, we're at a minimum visiting and possibly we're moving there. And I will say this.
I can't believe you don't already own a house.
To the listener who came all the way to Seattle, to our power out to Linda, power out Linda in Australia, we're coming your way. So I missed you when you were in Seattle, but I will see you in Larima. Okay?
Yes. Oh my gosh, so, this is great. They have a chair inside that
the Nutcracker
that just has a bear trap sitting on it, or like some sort of an animal, old fashioned animal trap sitting on it. It says the Nutcracker's seat.
I love it.
Hey, at least you know if you can't laugh, what do you got left?
Exactly. So the reason that the Fran Hodgetts has been under some suspicion, the proprietor of the tea house and meat pie place, is because she makes meat pies, and she had a long running fight with Mr. Moriarty, the guy who disappeared. Moriarty lived across the dirt road from her, and would get mad. She would get annoyed with him because sometimes I guess his dog would come stand in the middle of the road and that would create a problem for cut. Also, he would get mad when people that were going to Fran's tea house and meat pies would park on his property. And she would get mad when he would yell at those people and scare off her customers. And also when his dog would stand in the middle of the road and make it hard for people to drive. So there's also the fact that she makes meat pies. Mm-hmm. So people have now been coming to the town trying to figure out if this dude was in the meat pies. Like, everybody in this town has some way of disposing of meat.
Yeah, right.
You got the crocodile.
Right.
You got the meat pies. It's like everybody has some. It's like there was the guy who ran the cement shoes business. There was the other guy who was building giant stadium. There's like, how can you dispose of a body? These are all of the ways. You will have a Crazy Barry's wood chipper emporium two doors down.
Oh yeah. Or just go into the acid district. You get yourself some acid over
God,
there.
There's a list of suspects a mile long. Sure. in the acid and steel oil drum district. Just like everybody in this town had a chance to off this guy and apparently dispose of his remains. So this is another kind of crazy little element of this story. He nicknamed this woman, Ms. Hodgetts, Fran Hodgetts. Mr. Moriarty, who went missing, had so much acrimony with her that when the Pink Panther pub started selling meat pies, so now count them two meat pie locations in this town of 11 people. The guy who went missing, who lived across the street from the OG meat pies place, put up a huge sign that said, Larima Hotel, best meat pies in Larima. He put up it with an arrow. He put up a sign directing people not to the place across the street from him, but to the place down the street just to fuck with the lady who was making the meat pies who he didn't like, who he had nicknamed the Bush Pig, which apparently caught on in the town. Other people started calling her the Bush Pig. She didn't like it so much that she tried to get a restraining order taken out on the guy who is now missing.
Wow. It's it's old school cyberbullying right there. What do you call a bullying that isn't happening on the computer? I don't even know anymore.
Bullying. Yeah. I think that's just bullying. So The other people who had a, you know, some, I guess you could say there were some suspicions surrounding them, was a guy who worked for Miss Hodgetts. His name's Owen Laurie. He was her gardener, age 71, right?
Right.
Because average age, deceased in Larima, Australia. We're gonna repopulate that place, Andrew. We're gonna move there. We're gonna lower the median age by roughly 40
right.
years.
They're gonna be happy to see.
And
that.
So we're gonna start that place over. Mr. Laurie, the gardener, he's a tall, burly man known for keeping to himself and for taking good care of the tea house plants. He was the one who had an argument with Moriarty about the dog. I guess that the dog had been barking at the tea house from a spot in the middle of the road. An argument between Mr. Moriarty and Mr. Laurie ensued. According to testimony, Mr. Laurie shouted at Mr. Moriarty to shut the dog up or I'll shut it up for you. Miss Hodgetts went a step further, telling the court that Mr. Laurie attempted to jump the fence, I guess, and get to where Moriarty and his dog were. Mrs. Hodgetts said she told Owen Laurie, her gardener, age 71, don't do anything stupid. Mr. Laurie admitted to having a bad temper, but he denied any involvement, turning the court's attention back to where Mr. Moriarty was last seen, the Pink Panther. Oh, and I should mention this. The town noticed that Mr. Moriarty was missing when he did not show up for what's called church,
right.
Which is when all 11 people in the town, despite the pending restraining orders and general bad blood between a very small number of people, they would show up for what they called church, where they would all get together and watch the local, the public affairs program that they enjoyed. I don't have the name of it right in front of me, but they would basically get together and watch, like, Face the Nation, the Australian version.
But it's a rural version. It's like an agricultural show. Remember, the article says it's like it focuses on rural. Like, the country's best rural. I think they call it a rural issues show.
The town would show up. They would watch this show, and they called it church. And one of the things I find so, like, kind of charming and also inexplicable about this is imagine this town. It's 11 people. Most of them hate each other, or at least many of them hate this dude, Moriarty, for a variety of reasons. Sounds like he hates almost everyone except the guy who owns the Pink Panther. And this one friend of his that they interviewed in the piece, who's not a suspect, although maybe that's why he's pretending that he really misses the dude. There's like a guy they find at the bar who's like, I think about him every day. But basically, you have this town. You know how it is. You've had run-ins with your neighbors. You lived in Wallingford. It's a big neighborhood in a big city. And you had a run-in with a neighbor two doors down. And it probably stressed you out to some degree for the rest of your time there. At a low level eventually, but still it was on your radar. Now, can you imagine? The whole town is one city block. There's 11 people. Mm-hmm. And you have restraining orders / screaming fights with most of the town.
Right.
And then you, on Sunday morning, get together to watch the rural affairs program right. and sit around and check that out. What kind of a place is this?
I know. And they're all just stewing in their anger, it sounds like, this tiny little town.
Simmer
and
down,
got
Stu.
Their beef.
So the end of this piece kind of just leaves it as a sort of open question. I'm trying to see if I missed any other suspects.
I like the meat pie lady. I don't think you mentioned this. She says, like, you know, they all a lot of these quotes come from testimonies, so some sort of like coroner's inquisition where almost everybody in the town showed up and gave statements.
Yeah, they're actually brought in for questioning.
And the
like
woman
in public, though.
Right. And the woman who runs the meat pie shop is kind of like, there's a great quote in there somewhere. I don't have it in front of me, but she's like, they checked my sewers. They checked my pots.
I've got it.
They
here.
Checked like everything. Said, I don't have any said, place to hide a body.
She said, and I quote, and again, you're welcome for me leaving out the accent. She said, I've had me septic done, me incinerator searched,
right.
and me house done 4 times.
Right. I mean, it's dark. I don't mean to laugh at this shit, but and one other detail. I'll just list the things that stood out to me in the
article.
And
let me, may I throw one other thing? Job I'm not volunteering for. Checking the septic tank at the meat pie restaurant.
Right. Or anywhere, frankly, for me.
Yes, but especially at the meat pie restaurant.
Yeah.
If there's a septic that's particularly foul, it's got to be the septic at the meat pie restaurant.
Anyway, did you notice that, like, they just kind of casually mention near the beginning of the article that this is a town that is famous for murders and disappearances? And they don't really elaborate on that much. They mention that one person went missing in 2016, and that's another – and it was somebody passing through the town. It almost sounds like a Bermuda Triangle of Australia. Like, people just go missing
here. Yeah, I think it must be owing to its extremely remote location. You know, places that are out at the sort of end of the world will – a lot of times the people that end up there are trying to get away from something. And so I think it's not crazy to think that it probably has been a somewhat at times dangerous place. One other thing that was kind of interesting was apparently church has resumed, but without the charm Mr. Moriarty used to bring to it. Because he had no family in Australia, the public trustee now controls his property. To keep an eye on things that might look suspicious, his home has been fitted with security cameras. And there's a large missing person sign in front of it. Includes a picture of Mr. Moriarty smiling with a question many in town are still asking. What happened to Patty? And then there's a photograph. Apparently, there's still laundry hanging up in his yard that nobody has taken down. And so he remains missing. My guess is they'll never figure out who did it. If they knew who did it or if they had enough evidence to prove what happened, they probably would have already proved it at this point, and they have not. So this remains, I guess, just one of those weird mysteries.
Maybe, like, this is like In the Dark Season 3, TBTL edition.
I'm Madeline Barron. Can we do a co-production, a TBTL In the Dark co-production, where we go to Larima and we try to figure it out? And their job is to actually treat it seriously journalistically.
Our job is to get drunk
and dare each other, dare each other to sit on the nutcracker seat.
I want to pitch it. So maybe, because the good thing about this is you and I get up there, but we're using the In the Dark travel budget. You know, I'm going right to the travel budget right away on this one. So In the Dark picks up the travel budget for this one, but it's a co-production. I don't see how they could turn this down. But I think we have a meeting with our boss on Friday, so we'll bring it up.
Yeah, I'll be there for that.
Have you accepted?
You know
that?
How I typically make those meetings.
Have you accepted the invite yet?
What I'm going to do is move it three times and then not show up.
Because I did notice that it's at noon, and that's kind of a time when you and I are either about to record the show or, you know, kind of prepping the show. But I was kind of like, it's probably just easy to leave this one where it is. But I was curious. Now I'm just like talking to you off air, but I was curious if you were going to try to move that one. Just kind of like.
I
don't know why we could just move it up now.
I can't tell if this is going to – this will be relevant to your interests, but definitely not the listeners. Let me – and it's not on the list, and it's, you know, it's time to do emails and V-mails, so why not? I actually wanted to get your off-air opinion on this if I was just being so passive-aggressive. So I was supposed to be on a – I'll try to be semi-vague here. I was supposed to make a media appearance on a radio station. And it had been established a month ago that this was going to happen, but it was going to be by way of ISDN. So I was going to be here at my house, and I was going to be using this remote link that you and I use to talk to each other to talk to this radio station. And then on Sunday, the radio station people emailed me and said, okay, well, we'll see you at the appointed time in the lobby or whatever. And then I said, oh, actually, it's I'm going to be on my studio line, just to remind you. And then on Monday, I got an update from them, which was, you know, we talked it over and we thought, well, we'll wait until we have a chance to have you in person. And because a month or two ago, we had clearly established that it would be me on the studio, but now it was being treated like this was just a kind of a confusion, possibly on my part. Mm-hmm. I went back and in saying, okay, no problem, I low-key forwarded the previous chain where it had been discussed and decided I was going to be not at the physical location.
I would do that.
Just for some reason, the idea that it was being treated as if this was just like a kind of a, we'll just do it next time because it's not going to work because of, and I just kind of wanted it in the record. No, this was, we had agreed to a certain thing, but it didn't matter. Nobody cares. Like, was that hella passive aggressive of me? I didn't even address it. It was just on the end of my message. It was like, hey, no problem. I'll catch you next time. Usually from my home studio is going to work the best because of my schedule. But if I'm ever, you know, in town, I'll let you know. Like, I kind of played it cash. But then just sitting below my comments, without comment was the chain of conversation we'd had about the ISDN.
I know I've done that before. I mean, that doesn't answer your question, though. Is it passive-aggressive? Because I can obviously be very passive-aggressive. I use pink ink whenever writing angry notes. I'm on the record for that. One of the most
Bring that pen when we go to Larima. It's going to go great at the Pink Panther pub.
I wonder if they have any pink pens there. That's how I'm going to jumpstart the economy. I'm going to start selling pink pens out of the Pink Panther. Did you get a Pink Panther pen? I've done that before, and I know that feeling of just like you want it on the record that like, hey, you know, I'm everything's fine here, but I know that feeling when things get kind of just twisted a little bit, so it sort of sounds like, oh, well, if you can't be here in person anymore, which is kind of like the implication,
right.
Like, but what do you mean anymore? I wasn't even supposed to be here today. So anyway,
right.
I don't know if it makes you feel any better, but it probably doesn't, but that does sound like an Andrew move. I don't know if you want to model your passive aggressiveness on me, though.
No, you know what? That actually makes me feel a lot better, and the way you framed it, it gives a better description of what my kind of amorphous feeling was.
Mm-hmm.
Like I wasn't in quote unquote trouble. It was being treated like not a big deal, but I think it was the slight feeling of like just the sense that maybe I had been confused on it, or maybe mm-hmm. I had changed the plans at the last minute on them, which I had not. That I could not allow that to go on without any kind of a just subtle reminder that I was doing things according to the plan and that they had changed the plan.
And this is just a quick thing and we should probably move on. But
yes,
do you it's not something that now hurts you. Like it wasn't a promotional thing for a specific thing that
no.
you have coming up on LiveWire or anything like that. So
No. Okay. It was just kind of, you know, everything was fine and low key and low stakes, and yeah, it wasn't any big deal, and everybody was cool about it too. And then the person who I was corresponding with was like, oh, I'm sorry, I got confused, okay, cool, we'll catch you next time. So I guess it had the desired effect.
Oh, so they did see it. See, I assume they wouldn't even see it. You have to scroll down for that.
No, they saw it and then they responded like, oh, hey, sorry, I got a little mixed up. So it was like clear, like they picked up what I was
good.
Putting down.
Okay.
And
no,
I was trying to do it
good,
in a like
I think
I don't know, maybe we shall see. All right.
Here I go once again with the email every week. I hope that it's from a female. Oh, man. It's not from a female.
How about, like, a quickie?
Yeah.
A shorty? And
I'll
then we'll wrap things up.
Got a good advice, somebody looking for neighbor advice, but I don't think that'll be a quickie, so we'll save that for another day. But I did like this. Hey, how's Olive doing, by the way, the Bay Kitty?
Bay Kitty's great.
Her paw is all healed up now.
Paw is 100% now. And it was exactly what the impossibly handsome veterinarian said, which was, because when we brought her in, her paw was mega swollen and we thought that she had like injured her paw. And he was like, I think what this is probably a bite. He couldn't get close enough, as I've told the story that day. He couldn't actually inspect it closely enough to know, because when he touched her paw, she straight Frodo'd him.
Gollum'd him?
Was that? It was not.
Wasn't it Gollum
it was
who screamed?
Gollum. No, it or, was. It was. It was Bilbo.
Oh,
that was the effect the ring was having on the ring's power was so strong that even Bilbo, lovable, sweet character.
Right now,
he wanted to get.
Yes. Okay. I didn't get it the other day when you were
sense?
Talking about it. I do remember that because it's scary because he's a lovable guy. I must have been half tuned out. Sorry about that.
Anyway, so
your cat
Olive
freaked
Bilbo'd
out.
Him. Cat freaked out, so he had to make an educated guess, and his educated guess was she probably has a bite, and it's probably so there's an abscess and it's probably swollen. And I honestly, when he said that, I was like, that makes no friggin' sense. Like her paw is all swollen. It's probably a broken finger. And what are you doing? You probably just got through veterinary school on your good looks and charming personality. But he was 100% right. And what had happened was, and what we learned later as the swelling went down and things got better, she had a bite or a scratch on her arm, which was, you could see it eventually. It was intense. Like the fur was kind of ripped away. It was, you know, it was a pretty good sized gash. And then what was happening was there was a huge infection. And then I think that a lot of, not to be gross, but a lot of the stuff was draining down into her paw.
Mm-hmm.
So it was creating, you know, fluid and problems, and that was draining into her paw. And eventually the paw went back to normal size, and the gash healed up, and she's right as rain.
Great. Well, you were mentioning while she was in a lot of pain and Handsome Vet was trying to touch her, he had to bring out the cat gloves. Didn't he have a name for them?
Yes.
Maybe he didn't.
They were called the cat gloves.
Cat gloves, there you go. How did they come up with that, do you suppose? We're talking about the protective gloves that, you know, vets will have to put on if they're dealing with a dangerous animal like my cat Theo every time he goes to the vet. Well, somebody, listener Dave in New York City.
Get the cat gloves.
Get the cat gloves. Has a little bit of
a different commercial.
Yeah.
They're like, this is from New York City. New York City, get the cat gloves.
Dave says, I was a veterinary technician for 10 years, and there is nothing in the way of cranky cats that I haven't seen. I like how he puts that, by the way. There is nothing in the way of cranky cats that I haven't seen. When teeth and claw aren't enough, many will try to poop and pee on you. You are correct. Ooh. When you talk about the cat gloves being elbow-length welder's gloves, which are better than nothing, but I have scars on both hands where cats bit straight through them. I convinced my boss at the time, to invest in a pair of Kevlar-lined gloves, the same stuff in bulletproof vests, for handling
Damn.
The angriest of cats. With those... it says, with those on, you could pick the cat up, hold it down, and the cat would vent their highly justified frustration and fear without any bloodshed. I thought I was pretty safe in my bulletproof gloves, right until the time a cat came up my arm like Jaws on the orca and slashed my face. After that, I made sure I had not only my Kevlar gloves, but also a big, thick towel to bundle them up with. Power out, Dave in New York City. By the way, I thought he was going to say, like, a hockey mask or something. Like, by the end, yeah. Like, you go in and you hand your cat to somebody who definitely looks like a mass murderer from a horror movie.
Leatherface.
Yeah, right.
Wow. See, you know what I like about that email? I love that he adds in the, like, their well-deserved, what do you say, frustration mm-hmm. or fear or something.
Sure.
I think that's so impressive because, and this is really why I think for a lot of people that work with animals, particularly sick and injured animals, it's really kind of a calling. Because the second time I got bilboed by a cat, I'd be like, fuck these animals.
Right.
And he's, like, understanding, as were the people at this clinic we went to, they understand. It's like, this cat's just in pain and scared, and, like, the ability to keep that in mind. Is really cool, and I appreciated that about the people that were working with Olive, and appreciate that about listener Dave in New York.
Yeah, so let's leave the emails there for today, and maybe we'll get into this advice question tomorrow if we have a little extra time.
All right, probably got some more. Yesterday I did kind of a summary of the digressions, and I felt like it was almost kind of it was therapeutic in a way. I was gonna say if I don't have more digressions. Tomorrow we may have time for that email. What were the digressions today? This will help you write up.
Yeah,
the,
let's just open up the web editor here. What did we talk about? Well, we went on a long thing about dinosaurs, the TV show.
Ah, yes.
Finale. So we finally TBTL finally reviews the series finale of the TV show Dinosaurs as it aired in 1994. The long-awaited TBTL review.
Not the mama.
Oh, we talked about my weird trip to the grocery store in which I'm stalking a newspaper vendor, defending the personal liberties of other newspaper vendors, and being somewhat shirty with the people who are trying to sell me yearbooks.
We talked about the anger diet.
Oh, yeah, that's right, which I'm still thinking about naming the show, either the anger diet or Yes, other... the Donors. What do you have?
I also had, I have Anger Diet, and I have Pink Pens at the Pink Panther Pub.
What do you like better?
I like the Pink Panther Pub one only because Anger Diet just probably sounds like more annoying conversation for me about not eating or eating a weird.
Yeah.
Which is actually what it is in the show, but I don't know if we want to trumpet that because I feel like.
People will think that we like talked a lot, but we did not actually talk about right. dieting much. Okay, that sounds good.
Thoughts on a song. What if today we go out with the Of Montreal Outback song.
Let's go out back tonight. Let's pretend we're in Antarctica. I don't know what the next line is in the Let's Go Out Back Tonight song. Is there another line, or do they just say that?
I think that's the only words in the song, because I think that it's just like kind of instrumental while the people are eating, you know, their food at Outback, and then... Actually, that would have been an okay title for today's show, too. Let's Go Out Back Tonight.
Oh, yeah. You know,
a lot of the show did reside... Or did take place in Australia, in the outback, no less.
Mm-hmm. I like your pink pens at the Pink Panther Pub.
Ooh, what if we called this show Alligator Dundee?
I kind of like that. Let's do that. I'm writing it down. Sorry for the silence. All right, I like that. I'm also scrolling through my music, but what I do is I always look at what I've been playing lately, but mostly what I've been playing lately is stuff that I've played on the show already. So, hey, do you know that I should talk about this with David? There's like a huge I'm loving the Song of the Summer list, but there's like some huge backlash against Drake. Like, I mean, I know in general in the culture there's a backlash about Drake, but like some smartass recreated the TBT Telethon playlist without the Drake song so that now they can listen to it and everybody's like, thank you, you are the second coming. I'm actually...
What's wrong with Drake?
I think I'm voting for that Drake song over the Beths, by the way. Don't forget, you can vote for what you want to see the Song of the Summer at tbtl.net. The brackets are up. You can fill out your forms and share them online and so we can see what your predictions are for the winners. But... like, I love that
Is there something that we're missing about Drake? Like, is he a bad guy? I'm not even joking when I say that. Is it something about his behavior, or is it just, like, not liking the song? Ooh, I like the graphic.
I think people just, which graphic?
TBTL Song of the Summer
2018. Oh, thanks. Yeah, well, the actual picture comes from the Getty Images thing, but, I came up with the font. I'll take credit for that.
I like it. No, I like the whole thing.
Thanks. Yeah, you know what? I'm looking here. The person who reposted the Drake list newsletter is somebody who goes by the name of Meek Mill. So maybe that has something to do.
Oh! Hey, that's a pretty good spoof.
They're probably getting along these days anyway. Anyway, I was a little surprised by that. It's like, really? I mean, I understand. I mean... first of all, I think somebody making that big of a point, like, and everybody, I mean, people seem to be in agreement. They're like, I didn't know that it was that hard to skip a song on a Spotify playlist, first of all. So I think somebody's
I'm just trying to get to the, if people just don't like the song, that's fine. Just don't vote it in. But if there's something that we missed, I feel like the news cycle moves so quickly these days. If there's there's something about Drake where it's like we're not supposed to be playing him because he did something that I'm not aware of.
I think his only sin is I think he loves too much.
Sweaters he's worn at Toronto Raptors games are also on the line.
They're certainly on the line, but not crossing it.
I did it a few times during Degrassi Junior High, the Canadian reboot, when he was, you know... I think his acting could be called unbelievable, but again, none of these are things that, I just voted. I just voted on that particular song, but I'm not going to tell you what I voted for.
I got to say, it kills me because I love that Beth's song, the song by the Beths that Drake is up against. But for me, like, because it was already such a sensation and like when I was, you know, really... just out there in the middle of Green Lake, just really trying to open my heart and my ears to the songs this year. Every time that Drake one came on, I was just like, yeah, I mean, clearly this is the song of the summer. Like, I think I got to vote for that one, certainly in the first round, because it's like it has captured the general, like the kind of imagination or the hearts of the wider listening audience, which I know TBTL, sometimes we choose the smaller songs that are just for our little mini community, but it's also kind of got a weird backstory. Like, you can't go online without hearing it. And also, I just like it. Like, when I hear it, it gets stuck in my head and I get excited.
And
that it's
also,
coming
on. The In My Feelings challenge is, however, you know, I don't think that was something that was sort of a.
AstroTurf.
I don't think that was a marketing thing. Yeah. I mean, I think that really was this comedian Shiggy was just messing around with his friends and it kind of went, as they say, viral. But even that's another element to it. It's like, okay, well, what is a song that has been ubiquitous? It's like, it's not just been ubiquitous as a piece of music. There's actually a sort of, you know, there's a whole cultural meme of dancing to the song that is its own whole thing. So it's a pretty strong argument for its impact on the culture this summer.
Yeah, that's what I think. So anyway, I was a little surprised about the hate, but I guess a little surprised and a little because that's actually probably one of the front runners for me. But it also might have to do with the fact that I don't listen to a lot of top 40 radio, so maybe people are just really sick of it, or I don't know, maybe people are just trying to, you know.
I could also seriously be fine with this Tessa Violet.
Cause I'm a stalker, I see right. Oh, God, I'm just trying to play cool.
By the way, you got to watch the video, too. I know I am, as you say, Andrew, I'm putting my thumb on the scale here, because if I play, like, this song on the show, I'm tacitly giving it kind of a nod that I'm not giving every other song. But do check out the video. The video is, like, sort of the it has the sort of visual equivalent of that cool kind of, I don't know what you'd call it, like, where they take... You know, you take a beat, and I'm not talking about chopping and screwing, even though we do love that reference on the show. There's just sort of like the video equivalent of what's happening sonically, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. So when something's kind of repeating and going back and forth on itself, the visual image is doing the same thing, and it's very interesting.
I will take a look. So. Yeah, and I don't mind. Frankly, I don't mind putting our fingers on the scale. I mean, is that bad? Especially because this time I feel like, again, like I just feel I'm just really enjoying this one. I appreciate that your brother stepped up to do all the hard work, because, again, I think it's a better listen. Also, I just feel like I can have opinions on this stuff now. I'm not as close to it, you know, and I'm just
have an opinion, jerk.
Have an opinion already. Come on.
That's our new. Right.
Have mostly an opinion, I want to know. We could steal two different concepts from the same sports radio station.
Who was responsible for the little the little, what would you call it? The writing underneath the bracket that says "click here to embiggen."
Oh,
that is also genius.
That is a holdover from the Stewbot days. He wrote that on one of the first ones, and I always thought that was hilarious.
That's
so
great.
Kept that.
Way to go, Stu.
But like I will say,
like you need more plaudits,
yeah,
my friend. I
right.
mean, like, he's not already running the internet,
right? But there was also some more language on that page, by the way, that Kiki wrote all of that. Again. Thank you for doing that. In the past, I was responsible for all that stuff, and it's also way more clever than anything I would have come up with. So, anyway, good job.
So there you go, tbtl.net. Good stuff.
Good stuff.
Get over there. Vote for the song of the summer. We're calling this one Alligator Dundee. And did we get any closer to a song to go out with?
No. I mean, I'm looking at songs still related to the fire.
All I listen to is Mac Miller. It's the only music that's worth listening to as far as I'm
concerned. Do you want to hear the Mac Miller song that I mentioned? This is like one of his earlier hits that I think you were not familiar with.
Yeah.
Called Knock Knock. And we use a version of this. It's using a sample of an old 60s song by a woman I can't think of right now. And we use his version of this as our theme song for after these messages. There's one line in here where he makes a comment about, like, I don't know, his junk, but then he comes back with another line that says, I'm just kidding. He's like kind of walks up to the line of disrespectfulness, but then takes it back. So, a little warning
for
everybody.
Well, thank you for listening, everybody. We do appreciate it. Another fun show,
as
far as I'm concerned. And that's what matters. We'll be back here tomorrow with more imaginary radio for you, as long as... Oh, yeah. Oh, this is.
Yeah.
Oh, of course. Boom,
boom. This is going to feel real good, all right? Most dope.
I love that. I don't. Well, I'll do a little personal research after the show on the origins of that song. We'll be back here tomorrow with more Imaginary Radio. Until then, go Bagels, go eat a Mariners, and please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to you all. It gets me every time.
A million bucks, but my money don't really feel like I do. And from the ground I build my own damn buzz. People was amazed I was still in high school, but now I'm out, and money what I'm about. Trying to get so much that I can't keep count. New kicks give me cushion like whoopee. Keep a smile like I eat pork cookie. Everything good, I'm white boy awesome. Up all night, Johnny Carson. I ain't got a Benz, no, just a Honda. But try and get my money like an anaconda. Real, real long, cross the country. Smoke joints in the whip, no cap can bust me. Driving to the stage, they applaud and scream. All them pretty little girls come and flock to me. Yeah, I rack the beat. 1, 2, 3, 4 Some crazy ass kids coming out of me, no, so. If you got weed, you can come fly with me. I don't take pity on them silly little hoes. Millie Vanilli, but this is-
Power out.